Man, that Mark Zeno likes to talk, huh? Wow. What's up, Atlanta? How's everybody doing? It's Chris Thomas Turtle with you for a good time, not a long time, so get on board. You know the drill. 404-726-0929. It's me and you on the phones from now until 7:30. Falcons fans, let's get right into it, shall we? Because, again, Mark Zeno really likes to talk. Falcons fans, let's take a look at this thing, shall we? As we're breaking down all the scenarios leading into the game in Germany this weekend, let me ask you a very serious question here. How far away right now are the Atlanta Falcons from where you thought they'd be at the beginning of the year? Again, here's my question to you right off the rip here. Going to take all your calls from now until 7:30. How far off are the Atlanta Falcons from where you thought they'd be at the start of the season? Because I could make the argument it's only probably a game away from where you thought they'd be, but because of the way that they've lost these games, especially the last three, that have just been such an epic gut punch, that I think you can make the argument it feels a lot worse. Again, because I think statistically, if you were going over the games at the start of the season, you probably thought Carolina was a win. You probably thought Buffalo and Washington were going to be losses. Vikings game was up in the air. Dolphins game you probably thought was a win. So it all kind of comes out in the wash. And then to see what happened last week against New England, I think New England was a giant question mark. New England and Minnesota, I think, were the toss-ups there. So if you told me they were, you know, 4-3, or, you know, instead of just being where they are right now at 3-5, which just looks so much worse, if you were 4-4 or even 5-3, just a couple of games better. So again, how much further off is this team from where you thought they'd be, really? I think it has a lot more to do with the optics of how it's gone as opposed to the actual record itself. Because I think if you told me through the first 8 games they were 500 or a game over, I think a lot of us would have taken that based on who was on the schedule. Because the hardest games of the schedule were on the front of it. It was those two. It was Washington and it was Buffalo. And you pass that test with flying colors. But the fact that it's all fallen apart in the epic fashion that it has over the last 3 weeks, particularly the last two with Miami and with the way New England went at the end, I think it feels a lot worse than it actually is. In terms of record, make no mistake about it. I am not giving the Falcons a pass here at all. You all know that. But just in terms of trying to have some perspective on where we are right now in the season, obviously 3-5 is not good. And I said this yesterday, and we took a lot of great phone calks about it. I think if you go 3-6, I think it's over. I know there are some people out there. I've spoken to a bunch of different people about this just to pick their brain. I've gotten a variety of different answers. I think 3-6 is over. I think 3-6 is the death knell. I think there's a case to be made that at 3-6, you may have one extra week. I don't think so. I think there's going to be too many teams ahead of you at this point with looming games against Seattle and the Rams, who are both really good teams, and you wouldn't even be able to afford to split those. That's the unfortunate part about it. So 404-726-0929. Let's have an honest conversation tonight, Falcons fans. Again, the question is the following. How far off are the Falcons right now from where you thought they'd be at the start of the year? Record-wise, I think it's just a game or two. Definitely 3-5 is not okay, and I don't think any of us thought that. 4-4? 5-3? Did anyone out there have their record be orange? Did anyone out there have the record being better than 5-3 at this point? I think if you did, probably a little foolhardy. I think that was probably a wee bit too optimistic. So I think, again, just in terms of the pure numbers, as Dukes and Bell likes to say, not terribly far off. But in terms of the optics and the visuals, not good, folks. Not good. The Falcons are trending. The arrow is trending as down as any team in the NFL right now. And it's really unfortunate to say that. And that's why we talked about yesterday, is this game a must win? It's funny. Again, I mentioned it yesterday. I turned on Dukes and Bell, and those were the first words out of their mouth yesterday. I was like, ah, that was exactly what I was going to talk about tonight. So we're on the same page. So we'll take your calls when we get back. 404-726-0929. How far off are the Atlanta Falcons right now from where you pictured this team would be at the start of the year? I think it has more to do with how the games have looked than the actual record itself, because I think the actual record itself is certainly within spitting distance of where we all thought it would be. Again, not this bad, but close, a game or two. I don't think anybody, and if you're a Falcons fan that thought that they'd be better than 5-3 at this point in the season, please call in. I would love to hear the games that you thought that they were going to win and why you felt that way. But either way, 404-726-0929. We'll take your calls when we get back. I'm with you until 7:30. It's Chris Thomas tonight, leading you into Thursday Night Football. Oren and I will make our picks. Guess who's all tied up? Oren made a mistakey-poo. We'll get into that. We'll make the rest of our picks on Friday because I got your first shorty show leading into Hawks. But when we get back, it's all me and you on the phones. How far off are the Atlanta Falcons from where you thought they'd be at the start of the year? Phone lines are blowing up, so we'll get right to you. Just want to remind you to join Sports Radio 92.9 The Game after each Falcons game for the Falcons Flyover. It's your first chance to call in and react after every Falcons game, and it's brought to you by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. That's the Falcons Flyover, immediately following every Falcons game this season on 92.9 The Game. And I've heard the host of that show is pretty cool. But that's just my opinion. 404-726-0929. Before we get to the phones real quick, did have somebody step up to the plate, Oren. Our buddy Spencer Neal, who you've heard on this station before, said, Turtle, I had us at 6-2. I thought we'd split with Tampa while each team won at home. I didn't think Drake May would be having an MVP season. I don't think anybody did. We hadn't beat the Commanders in 5 seasons, so I figured we were due for a win against them, especially with how the game went last year. I mean, Spencer, it's a rational, reasonable take. I think it's just bold. I mean, to think this team would have been 6-2 after 8 games, after what happened last season with the way they started and fell apart, I don't know. I thought Washington and Buffalo were just going to be a little bit too tall of a task, but the ultimate irony is the way everything else has played out since then. So the question now volleys to you at 404-726-0929, and we thank our buddy Spencer Neal for checking in. How far off are the Atlanta Falcons right now from where you thought they'd be at the start of the season? Let's start with Gio. Gio, you're in the game. Go ahead.
How you doing? So first and foremost, I want to start with the Atlanta Falcons have been putting me through the absolute dumpster recently. And my cousin is Drake London. And what he told me about the other day about when they played Miami Dolphins is absolutely amazing. How Raheem Morris did not want him to play, all because they didn't want Kirk Cousins to play well. And I find that very, very crazy.
Wait, Gio, hold on. Let me just do my homework here as a radio host before we proceed. You're telling me, I just want to make sure I'm getting this right. You're telling me that your cousin is Falcons wide receiver Drake London.
And
that he told you that they kept him out of the game versus Miami because they didn't want Kirk Cousins to perform well.
Exactly. And I have many inside sources. If you want to check my line after this, I can talk to you all about it.
No, Gio, just let me ask you one question. In a game where there's 17 per season and each one is holy, is sacrosanct, is church to win that game, why would an NFL coach put himself in a position voluntarily to make themselves much better off of a chance to lose a game? Like, to me, that makes absolutely no sense, Gio.
That is a great question, but here's the thing. Who is the one that paid $250 million for a quarterback and decided to start Michael Penix? That's the coaches. So if they go back and they see that Kirk Cousins is playing well, and what are they going to do? They're going to start Kirk Cousins? They're going to get under the fire? They're going to say, why'd you guys stop starting Kirk Cousins for Michael
Penix?
Yeah,
but Gio, what if that game was the difference between them making the playoffs and not?
I'll tell you what, it won't be that game, because the way the season has been going is absolutely horrible. The coaching staff needs to go. Zach Robinson needs to go. The only good thing in this whole team right now is the defense and Drake London. I really love the way that Michael Penix is throwing the ball. In fact, he does have this inconsistency. He is still young. But at the same time, the fact that we are paying someone $250 million, he can't run. He's immobile. He's a pocket passer, but he
no.
Gio,
I get it. I get it, man. And thanks for checking in. Listen, I don't know. I have no idea. Gio could be 100% telling the truth, or he could just be trying to. He could be a Michael Penix stan, just trying to make his point. I have no idea. We have no way to know. But I cannot fathom. Again, there's 17 games in a season that any coach in the NFL would be moronic enough to tank a game because you don't want your backup quarterback to succeed. I refuse. If that's the case, then everybody needs to be fired and we need to start this whole thing over again from scratch and nobody's safe. I refuse to believe it. So I listen, I don't want to sit here and just crap on Gio, because I have no way. Again, I don't know. I have no way of proving what he's saying is true or false, but I just can't sit here on these airwaves and agree that I would think an NFL coach would tank a game, again, one of 17, that could potentially be the difference between making the playoffs and not, because you want to spite your backup quarterback. I can't run with it. 404-726-0929. Ron is up next. Ron.
Yeah. I don't know how to follow that one.
I'm right
on with you, bro. I don't know. I wouldn't have come on here and said that, but, you know, it may be true. All I can say is, thanks for taking my call. Your insight and your knowledge is spot on. I mean, the Falcons played good Sunday at the second half. They played awesome in the fourth quarter. Yeah, the guy missed an extra point. They still had a chance to win the game, or at least, you know, drive down there, but they didn't run their timeouts right. They didn't do the, well, that's coaching. I totally think they should be 5-3, because you shouldn't lose to Miami the way they did. They made Tagovailoa look like a superstar out there when he's won one game all year.
No,
so
you're
100%.
No, you're 100% right. Thank you for the kind words and the phone call, Ron. That's why this team is where they are right now, right? Because of the absolute maddening inconsistency. But at the end of the day, to Ron's point, it's like we're right there. 3-5 could so easily be 5-3. And that's why we're asking this question tonight at 404-726-0929. Because I think 4-4, 5-3 would be 90% of where the audience would go, right? We heard from our buddy Spencer Neal, who said 6-2, but I think he is in the overwhelming minority in that regard. Let's see what Ray thinks. Ray, you're up next.
Hey, how you doing? Turtle, love you guys' show.
Thank you.
Just on that one call, there's a note for that. First of all, no NFL player is going to tell their cousin that it was the coach, this coaching this and coaching that. That ain't going to happen.
No.
But anyway, what I would like to say is, when I looked at the schedule, I believed in this Falcons team. I think the media boosted them up. I think the coaching staff boosted them up. I love this team. I think the Falcons have the players to go places. It's just the coaching staff. I knew that from the beginning of the year when they went and rehired Raheem and then Zach Robinson on top of that. Didn't know what to expect from him, but you see what we expected. I did not ever in the life of me think that we would ever, we wouldn't be a 6-2 team, not because of the players, not because of the players, but because of the coaching staff. I had no belief in them, and it turned out to be true. Also, too, if they go 3-6, fire that staff and just put Jeff Albright as your head coach.
Well, Ray, here's the thing, though, and thanks for the phone call and the kind words as well. The Jets tried that last year, and it literally was a horror show. Like, to the point where he had to come out in the offseason and be like, yeah, that was not for me. I couldn't do that. And I'm not willing to dampen the spirits of Penix and Drake and all the guys that need to be here for the long-term future. And also, guys, Jeff Ulbrich needs to focus on this defense. This defense is ascending. I don't want to take him away from his duties. And you're certainly not giving it to TJ Yates or anybody else that's on this staff right now. So I think Raheem Morris, no matter what you feel about him, is going to probably finish out the season just because there really isn't anybody that's on this staff right now to replace him. Let's see what Norris thinks. Norris is up next.
Hey, what's up, Turtle?
Yo.
So I was under the belief that but through 8 games we would be 4-4 or 5-3. And I'll break it down quickly game by game for you to tell you why I thought it would be that way. One, Tampa Bay, we handled Tampa Bay all last year. Not only did we handle Tampa Bay all last year, but we also started off at home. So I thought that with the progress that we had seen from Penix in the first 3 games last year that he played to now, I thought that it would carry over and would carry us through Tampa Bay. I thought that the away game at Tampa might be up in the air. The Panthers definitely thought that we would win. Minnesota definitely thought we would win because of J.J. McCarthy and it being pretty much his first year coming off of injury. Washington, I thought that we would win that game. That was my toss-up game. The only reason that I thought that we would win was because of the way that we performed against them last year at their stadium. And we were at home again, so I thought that would go our way. Buffalo, I counted as a loss. San Francisco, I counted as a loss. So I can see where people kind of get closer to 5-3, 4-4. Definitely thought we would beat Miami, for sure. And New England, I'm not going to lie, we haven't beat them in forever, and I counted that as a loss at the very beginning of the year. No matter how they performed, throughout the year or the previous year.
So, no, Norris, listen, yeah, I think your assessment there is actually pretty spot on. I was recapping. That's pretty much how I had it going too. And I think, Norris, to your point, that's how the overwhelming majority of the fans would be thinking around 4-4, 5-3. And I'm holding my fingers up like a grain of salt. It's so close to being that. But because the Falcons are not a buttoned up organization right now, unfortunately, in terms of clock management, kicking games, special teams, in-game decisions, clutch performances. I mean, that's why this team is where it is right now, and it's so disappointing. Again, because I really think if you go 3-6, it's going to be almost impossible to get back. Frank is up next. Frank.
Hey, how you doing, man?
What's up, Frank?
Listen, I'm nobody's cousin, so I'll just give it to you straight. I'm really, it's like I'm disappointed in the Falcons, but I've lived here so long, it's kind of like it is what it is. And I thought their record would be better, but it's just like you said, it's not really their record, it's how they've been losing. And I'm hearing more people blame the coaching staff. If anything, you're supposed to be getting better each year. You know, people talking about, we'll give the guy a chance. You have to see progress.
Well, each year, how about each week?
That's true. I mean, the thing is, you have, you're 0-2 in the division already, and at least 3 teams going to come out of the NFC West. I mean, they're stacked over there. So as far as this whole wild card thing, my only goal for the Falcons at the beginning of the year, I said, you know, I don't care about the playoffs or nothing. Just finish above 500. That's all I kept saying. You go 9-8. That's at least showing that you're a competent team, and then, you know, you can build some pieces around it. That's been my only goal for, like, the past 3 years. I'm like, can you at least just finish above 500? And it's looking like they're not even going to do that again.
No, not unless, and Frank, appreciate the phone call, not unless they make significant changes quickly. Not unless they make significant changes quickly. 404-726-0929. Great calls to start it off. Again, I don't know who's cousins who, but we got to the bottom of it here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But more calls when we get back. I see our buddy Scotty's on hold. We'll take him and everybody else who's waiting patiently right now. We'll get to you back in 5 minutes. Chris Thompson, I Turtle. Are the Falcons where you thought they'd be at this point in the season? We're taking your calls next.
Listen, Turtle, it's real simple to me. I don't know how long some of these callers have been fans of the Falcons for, but I must be watching another franchise because, you know, outside of the Jets, we're a pretty dysfunctional organization from the top down, and it starts with ownership and it trickles down. I mean, I know that there is optimism, you know, with the talent on the roster this team has, but all we've done, especially recently, is consistently underperform. You talk about inconsistency. That's what this team does. They just consistently underperform. So to answer your question, where did I expect this team to be right now? You know, it's easy to say you expect them to win the games they should and maybe steal a few that they shouldn't. But in all honesty, I think that a realistic fan understands that it's the new year, but it's the same old Falcons, and they're gonna disappoint. And if you have any other thought besides, you know, this could be the year that they make the playoffs or whatever, I mean, the chances of that are really on life support at this point. And we keep talking about if they go 3-6, the writing's on the wall. It's almost like they're going to be guaranteed to go 3-6. I don't see them
beating
the Colts.
Well, Scott, did you think they'd beat Buffalo? I didn't.
Well, that's why I said you'd hope that they steal one or two. But the other thing is, what I didn't really expect in this season was, you know, Raheem and the coaching staff, I didn't expect them to coach like this. I kind of expected them to coach like their jobs were on the line. And to give you an example, I can't give you the exact team or what day it was, but I watched a play call the other day, and it was like they stacked the one side to the right, the wide receivers and tight ends were there, quarterback turned, and then the running back went the opposite way. And it's like, okay, that's a great creative play call, for example. When was the last time we've seen Zach Robinson do that? When was the last time that we've seen a game plan that actually made sense on offense? These are the things that are more shocking than anything else.
No, Scott, I got you, and I appreciate your call as always. Thanks for checking in. That's the problem, is that anytime you see something creative from Zach Robinson, I hear Mike Johnson pound the table on this all the time from the morning shift, and I hear him on the Atlanta Falcons radio network as well. Like, anytime Zach Robinson institutes a play call that's not a zone blocking scheme to the left or to the right, it's like Christmas morning for Mike Johnson. I hear it. He's like, oh my God, we trapped. Oh my God, we had a pulling guard. Oh my God, the center didn't have to reach to the linebacker. Like, he's ecstatic about it. And to Scott's point, and Scott's very astute about that, that's what the team struggles with so mightily week in and week out. And it's directly led to this team being 3-5. Mike is up next. Mike.
Hey, Turtle. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Earlier in the year when the schedule first came out, we were doing predictions. I called in, and my take at the time was 7-10 at best. And, you know, I think a lot of people were more optimistic about that. But
Vegas,
my reason back then, and
Mike.
Yeah, Vegas wasn't, but the reality of it is at the time I had a vote of no confidence in the coaching staff, especially Raheem Morris. And it's proven to be, you know, correct again. Raheem brought in buddies. He didn't bring in proven coordinators. When you're a head coach that failed at being a head coach the first time, you better be damn sure you bring in some good coordinators, not newbies, right? He already fired Jimmy Lake. Zach Robinson can't run the offense. Right now, you know, I predicted 7-10. I don't think we're going to get there.
Wow.
So, you know, Arthur Blank's really got to figure out how to hire coaches after he fires Raheem Morris, or we're just going to end up in this perpetual cycle of losing and never having a playoff game in Mercedes-Benz.
No, Mike, it's a great call, and unfortunately, I don't think you're alone in thinking that. I think there's a lot of Falcons fans out there that would agree that this team has a chance to get in some really dangerously hot waters if they don't win a couple of games quickly. Again, I'll say it again. I'm on the record as saying I personally think 3-6 is just about the line of demarcation in terms of this team making the playoffs. And if you don't make the playoffs, that means you failed this season. This was supposed to be the year. You break the 7-year curse and you get back on track with your new quarterback and Bijan Robinson in his prime and Drake in his prime and Pitts in his prime and the offensive line, which I know is banged up right now. But to Mike's point, to quote Yogi Berra, I heard Mark Zeno do it earlier. It's getting late pretty early out here. Carl's up next. Carl. Carl. Oh, that's all right. Carl, stunned silence from Carl. Let's go to Josh. Josh, you're up next.
Hey, what's up, Chris? Yep. Dude, the Geo call was classic, man. we got to get that guy back. And I was with him, you know, even on the cousin thing until he started talking about Kirk, you know, wanting Kirk to play bad or whatever. But anyway.
You get 17 games. You can't tank one because you're spiting your backup quarterback.
Yeah. Whatever. anyway, yeah. You know, 4-4, I was with it. I saw it going way different than it did, but progression and just the way the development of the team is just kind of what is surprising to me. I mean, the defense, in my opinion, is far and away better than I thought they would be. The offense is just so far away. And the scary thing to me is that the future just doesn't look good. I mean, I'm not sold on Penix. He can't run. He won't run.
No, he can run. That's the frustrating part. He can't. We saw it last week. He sprinted out there. He doesn't want to. That's the problem.
Well, he definitely doesn't want to. And, you know, the receiving corps is just a disaster right now. I mean, you know, we were optimistic about Darnell and Ray-Ray after last season, but I don't know what happened to Darnell. He's hurt.
He's clearly not himself.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously Ray-Ray's gone now. But, you know, it's just – and what does the future look like? I mean, it just doesn't look good. I mean, you know, shut down Bijan and we got nothing. We got Drake.
And appreciate the phone call. And that proved, though, still not to be enough because you have a kicking problem and you've had a kicking problem since week one of the season. So to Josh's point, even when you do find another valve to get you some points on the board, not good enough because, again, this whole conversation is stemming from, I think, and most of the callers have agreed, record-wise, it's only a game or two away from where you probably thought it would be, but it's how it's happened that's really just the gut punch of what's going on right now. Rolex is up next. Go ahead.
Say, it's a real depressing listening to these callers call in. Like, they're not real football players. They haven't played the game in the shows, man. We have a young team. I thought we would be 5-3 at this point. But just knowing what I know as a football player, we only 3-5 because two missed field goals. So let's get that out of the way first. Second of all, we had a lot of injuries coming into the season on the offensive line. Third of all, don't blame Raheem. Everybody stop blaming Raheem. It's not his fault. It's the fault that he picked the coordinators, but it's clearly Zach Robinson, man. This guy don't know what to do. And if you know Zach Robinson back at Oklahoma State, he wasn't all that good anyway. He just had Dez Bryant on his team and a couple more players. But other than that, man, we are right. Well, I didn't think we'd be at this point, but we are at a realistic point because we are a young team. We got a quarterback that's making his 11th, 12th start. I don't know why people thought he was just going to come off and go undefeated. I don't understand that part. And he ain't making no bad decisions. He made some good games. He had some good games, I'm sorry. Had a bad decision in the last game, but that's a rookie mistake. That's what rookies do. So,
Rolex, here's the problem, and thanks for checking in. I totally understand what you're saying. But, Rolex, there were playoff expectations this year. This team is not projected to be the Saints, right? This team was not project. I mean, Vegas kind of did, but here in Atlanta, that was not our MO. This was not a rebuilding year. This was a year to giddy up and go. Meat, finish us off. Meat, go ahead.
Turtle man, what's up, Turtle man?
Yo.
First, I want to start off by saying how foolish I was 2 weeks ago, thinking that Kurt would come in and be the savior. And also, I want to say, am I surprised that the Falcons are 5-3? No. Did I expect them to be 500? Yes. But I want to say, man, about the Patriots game, man, I'm so proud of them, man. They laid it all on the line. They were competitive. They've been competitive all year outside of those two games, which was a Miami and the Carolina game. And as a true Falcons fan, man, I can live with those games that look like the Patriots game every game, man. I'm okay with it.
No, me.
They live it all on the line.
No, I appreciate you. Thanks for checking in, as always. But here's the problem. Orin, meet on the WadeFord.com hotline as we welcome in our good buddy Bill Bender. Make sure you check out his work, senior writer for the Sporting News. Bill, let's start here locally. Brent Key making some headlines saying that cut him open and see what colors he bleeds, as he was asked about potentially leaving Georgia Tech for what could be greener pastures. We won't know until if when that happens. Do you think there is a team out there, though, that could make him a godfather offer that he can't refuse?
I mean, there's plenty of SEC schools that are in the market for a coach, and he's got the ties to Alabama, obviously. I think he's been great for Georgia Tech. My editor, Bill Troche, was out there today at Georgia Tech practice, so I'll have to ask him more about those comments. But, he's not the only one, though. There's Jeff Brohm and Clark Lee and Kenny Dillingham are all at their alma mater and all maybe going to be confronted with that decision, given that there are 9 Power 4 openings open right now.
How surprised are you that Wisconsin backed Luke Fickell?
Hard question, because obviously their offense has been brutal this year, a terrible, brutal watch. But I think Luke Fickell, you know, when they hired him, he did a good job at Cincinnati. And when we looked at the schedule in the preseason, they are a victim of an unbalanced schedule. It was particularly hard in October. That said, their offense will need to be better next season. They need to show some development there. Interesting game for them with Washington. And I think some of it has to do, some schools, Chris, a $30 million buyout or stick it out a year in a year where a lot of other coaches are going to get hired that you might want. Maybe you wait a year.
Yeah, it's a good point. But one school to segue here that can't wait a year, they need to get it right, is Auburn. And I think they need to go big game hunting. I don't know where they're viewed in the pecking order of a lot of these openings. I would assume definitely not towards the top two or three. Is there a logical fit there for you, or do you think they're going to have to get creative?
You bring up a good point. Big swing. They got to take one. It snuck up on me until I was kind of doing some research after Hugh Freeze got fired, that they're in line for a fifth straight losing season. You know, Auburn's typically unpredictable on a year-to-year basis, but now you can predict a losing season. And I think that's the hard part for them as a program. They have talent. They have top 15 recruiting classes. Whoever takes that job is going to inherit a program that had back-to-back top 10 classes the last 2 years. So can you capitalize on that is the big question. Aims in that. You know who a lot of guys are looking at is John Sumrall and Tulane and Ryan Silverfield. So that Memphis Tulane game tomorrow night be a little bit of an open audition in some ways.
Well, Silverfield's an interesting one because I don't know if you've caught on to this. It's just coming down that he apparently is called a team meeting to inform the team and staff that he's accepting the Arkansas job. Is that a fit for you?
Did that happen today?
Yeah, it looks like it just did.
Just did. Okay. Well, that changes that certainly. So if he's taking that job, right in the middle of a playoff run, that's the hard part for me to – is he going to stay? Well, that's my question. Is he staying at Memphis through the playoff run?
You know what? Let's you know what? I'm going to double back on my sources here, Bill, because I don't want to give you bad information. So let's put a pin in on that one, because it seems like there may be some foolishness going on as I try to do some deeper research here. So I definitely wouldn't want you to run with that.
Yeah, no, we're good. But either way, like Silverfield and Sumrall both are candidates to, you know, move up into the SEC. And that's a big game tomorrow night in terms of the Group 5 playoff race.
Yeah, and it just seems like those are two teams right now with two coaches that potentially, as you said, could be moving on to bigger and better things. And then that sort of starts the whole cycle over and over again, as we're talking with our buddy Bill Bender. Make sure you check him out in the sporting news. Definitely want to get your opinion on the first CFP rankings as well. Sort of the consensus I've gotten, and I'd love to hear your opinion, is it's like, wow, for the first time in a couple of years, they may have actually gotten it mostly right. Nothing really egregious sticking out to me. What about you?
Yeah, you just said it. It was one of those where when the rankings dropped, I thought, okay, then we manufactured a little bit of a Notre Dame-Miami argument, even though we saw the AP poll on Sunday, and it's the same thing. Anytime that there's kind of like a meh reaction to the rankings, it means they got them right. You know, I think they honored the head-to-head in every other spot but Miami-Notre Dame, and that tells me they got it right. There'll be a couple arguments along the way. At first I thought Utah was a little high, and then I got to looking at their strength of schedule. They're actually probably about right. The problem is I don't know how much they can move up knowing that they lost to BYU and Texas Tech.
Miami. I am having such a hard time, Bill, seeing where this thing goes for the rest of the season, because the tie here obviously is coming back to Georgia. The tie here obviously is we saw Carson Beck do what he's done in the last couple of games after having a stellar start to the season. Did they, in your opinion, play their way out of serious contention, or if they can find their way into an ACC title game, can they be back in this thing? I'm just not sure where to put my finger on this one.
Brutal loss. Brutal loss against SMU. And, you know, the opportunity, I think last time I was on your show, I'm sitting here saying, you'd have to go play back the tape, that I was like, yeah, they might be able to challenge Ohio State, and they're so good up front on both sides. But like you said, in those two losses, the interceptions. And, you know, one of the parts of this argument with Notre Dame, I said, well, if you look at the last four games between Notre Dame and Miami, there's no question. And Heather Dinich was talking about this. She does such a good job. The trajectories are so different. Notre Dame's on a good trajectory. The turnovers with Carson Beck, that bad throw at the end of the SMU game, and it really cost them. You know, they're. I think the problem with Miami, Chris, is they could go 10-2 and not get to the ACC championship game. So at that point, it's going to be really difficult to let them into the playoff.
Who has a better chance, in your opinion, of coming out on top in the SEC right now, Bama or Georgia?
Probably Bama, because I think they're going to get to Atlanta. You know, based on their schedule, I don't think they're going to lose a regular season game. Question is A&M going to open the door in these last couple games for Georgia to get a rematch with Alabama? I think Georgia's been living, as you know, they've been living on the edge the last couple weeks. That was a really fun game of Florida. They just keep finding ways to win. But right now, Alabama, I mean, Ty Simpson, 20 touchdowns, one interception. Defense is playing well. And their schedule is pretty favorable with LSU and Oklahoma coming to them. So despite the Iron Bowl on the road, I think Alabama is probably going to win the rest of their games.
I think we need to defend Ohio State a little bit, Bill, because a lot of this, like, make A&M number one, make Indiana number one. They're an undefeated defending national champion. I mean, does it need to be more complicated than that?
I always go by the Ric Flair theory. You know, you got to be the man, you got to beat the man. And they're still the man right now, right? They haven't lost. They haven't done anything to give me a reason to believe that they're not number one. Their defense is top scoring defense in the country. Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate are a cheat code. You know, last week, I started this stat out there a little bit. Targeted 11 times, 11 catches, 237 yards, 3 touchdowns. Both of them, I'm telling you, if they were both playing in the NFL, they'd be on my fantasy team right now. You know, that's how good those receivers are. So I think Indiana and Texas A&M, I respect it. But if you look at the cumulative conference winning percentage, that's a term everybody's going to have to know over the next month. Ohio, none of the three of those teams have a really good one, but Ohio State's the best of the three.
Yeah, well, it's and that is it their fault? That's really becomes what right. the question. I mean, that's the unfortunate part about it is you, as the cliche goes, you can only play who's on your schedule.
You can only play in front of you, and I mean, I never really penalized teams for that, but it is what it is. When you're, I went through today and kind of preview for some of the content we'll have next week on. Looked at every Power Four team in that cumulative conference winning percentage. Some schools have a really good one. Some schools don't. I mean, Texas A&M, out of all those SEC contenders, has the worst one. Georgia's is pretty good. It's on the positive side. They've played a tough schedule. Utah's played a tough schedule. USC and Oregon, surprisingly on the positive end of that metric, too.
If you had to pick one right now, because it looks like these two, at least in my opinion, if you have a differing one, love to hear it, are going to be talked about the most unless someone comes out of nowhere the last couple of weeks. Dante Moore or Fernando Mendoza, who has the better NFL prospects?
Ooh, that's pretty even. It's hard to say. I like Dante Moore. I do. I think, you know, you trust these Oregon quarterbacks next level a little bit. Bo Nix has done a really good job. But I like Mendoza too. You know, they've both been really good decision makers. I don't really have a strong read on which one will be the better quarterback right now. I know our Vinny Iyer had an NFL draft or mock draft out there today. And to be honest, I like Julian Sain better than both of them. And I think we got a year to wait on him. I know he gets penalized a little bit because he's thrown to such good receivers, but his accuracy is off the charts.
Do you directly credit Ryan Day for his growth? Because it looked like in week one, it was a little bit shaky, but he's just rocketed off from there.
Well, I think, you know, they were up against a good defense first start, all those things. And they just let him kind of cork it. Trust what you have around him. You know, I think that will continue to develop as we go along with him. And, you know, last weekend, Arch Manning looked pretty good. And I'm thinking that that's going to continue to be a thing over the next year and change if he stays in school, which I think he will. So, you know, you just got to be patient with quarterbacks. I don't, in this particular class, there isn't any that I'm like, oh man, I would love to start a franchise with that guy. But as you know, and we've seen this over the years, and we're in a league where Aaron Rodgers and Flacco were starting a couple weeks ago. It is definitely an inexact science, and experience matters.
There's no way Arch comes out, right? No way.
I don't think so. I wouldn't, and I think I would anticipate that we see even more out of him next year. There's been ups and downs. He had a good game against Vanderbilt. I think playing in the SEC, there's more room for growth. And, you know, it reminds me of – this is a loose comparison at best. Joe Burrow had a really rough first year in the SEC, but they hired Joe Brady, throw to the receivers that he had, Jefferson and Chase, and the rest is history. So I'm not saying Arch Manning's going to throw 60 touchdowns next year on a legendary offense. I'm just saying we could see that development, him take the next step toward being a first-round quarterback by the end of next year.
Bill, appreciate the time. As always, senior writer, Sporting News, College Football. We'll be checking you out. We'll talk soon.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on, Chris. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bill. That is Bill Bender there. Beware of internet trolls, people. Oof, Warren, that was... Sir.
Yeah, Gunnar Stockton was not a friend of mine.
Sir.
Not a friend of mine Saturday night.
You know what happened?
Yeah, Gunnar took a dive.
He took a knee.
He took a dive in my book. That wasn't a knee, that was a dive.
Should he have? Was that the right football play?
It was the right football play, but it just would have been nice to have seen, even if I didn't have that Georgia, what was it, 3.5 or 4, whatever it was, in that moment, it would have looked nice to stick it to Florida. Anytime you can stick it to Florida.
Well, you did stick it to Florida.
I mean, you won.
Listen, you're talking about sticking it to Florida from a very personal level.
I mean, not my person, from maybe Gunner's person, because...
Well, you and Mark Zinno are definitely simpatico on this. I have no doubt that he's feeling exactly the way you're feeling.
Kirby, though, after the game, said that was the exact right play to make. That was the exact right thing to do.
How much time was on the clock?
That was... I think they were right at or very close to... No, it was beyond the two-minute warning.
Yeah.
So they were already beyond the two-minute warning. and Florida had no timeouts left. So from a purely football standpoint, what you did was correct, because unless something crazy happened.
Well, I was just about to say, Florida's chances of coming back, even if you score the touchdown, were like 0.01.
They'd have to score and then recover,
score,
the
onside kick and then probably throw a Hail Mary.
Something like that, yeah. It'd have to be – or just – I think at that point it would cut it to – if you had gotten a two-point conversion, you could have gotten you could have gotten a two-point conversion on the touchdown score, and then you would have had to hit like a field goal to tie it up. So just maybe like two huge chunk plays, again, very small percentage, but hit two huge chunk plays and get in field goal range. So,
but here
and
the
kicker's
are.
Not bad. Here I am.
And here you are. And now we're tied.
I've had two very bad beats this year.
You have. And they're both on local teams.
Took Tech to cover that Temple game, and Temple scores with 3 seconds left or whatever it was. It was under 10 seconds left of that ball game, and they scored on a long pass, an over 20-yard pass. And then Georgia Tech, this will be Georgia this weekend or last weekend. They don't can't. He took a dive, man. He took a dive.
I love how frustrated you are.
It was funny too, because the reaction from a lot of people, Georgia fan, whatever, like, oh, they're gonna win, but damn it, I had that Georgia line. I had that Georgia line.
Well, let me ask you this though: before you made the pick, did you consider just how wobbly Georgia has been in some of these games this year, and dare you take them to win convincingly?
Yes, but a couple things were in the back of my mind when I made that pick. How, A, Georgia is a second-half football team.
They are. That's very true.
At some point or another, I thought Lagway would have a really silly, bad, dumb pick in the second half.
He often does.
And Georgia, just their rushing game, I felt like, because Florida's not very great at stopping the run. So I thought at some point, like, listen, they're just going to grind out a couple of drives like they did in the Auburn game. Just grind out a couple of drives, and their defense will hold, and Bob's your uncle. And that would be the – because it just needed to be – it was 4.5. It just needed to be – it didn't have to be double digits. But – if they had gotten that touchdown right there, it would have been double digits. All they had to do was just score a couple times in the second half, let your defense do what it's supposed to do, and I'd be sitting two games up instead of tied right now.
So are you hearing any of this Mississippi State's not that bad this year stuff that's going on? Because I'm not buying it. I was talking with our head honcho, Mike Conti, about this a little bit the other day. I'm not really buying it, but I am hearing a little bit of chatter online on some message boards and on Twitter, like, oh, like Georgia better not come out sleepwalking. I'm just like, nah. They have no margin for error. They can't.
No, Mississippi State is not as bad as their record says they are. Like, they had a narrow loss to Tennessee in overtime early in the season. I think they started off with 4-0, so It's one thing to say, like, oh, you're beating up the FCS teams, but it's still something to say that the first four games of the season you didn't have a loss. So sometimes you get undefeated that far that early, that momentum kind of carries you through. They don't have a bad quarterback, a Blake Shapen, the transfer from Baylor.
Yeah,
he's not bad. They can toss the ball around a little bit. So. A guy that played receiver here last year is there, Anthony Evans, your punt returner, kick returner, and he's having a pretty decent year at receiver. So it's just they got some transfer pieces where I'm subscribing to the same theory of thought I had with the Florida game, which gives me worry that, oh, yeah, like they got to pull away in the second half. Mississippi State might keep this close for, like, the first quarter. Georgia will go in halftime with a decent lead, and then.
But has Georgia's secondary shown you enough improvement for you to really believe that? That's the question, right?
Not yet. I'm like, still waiting.
That's
to
where
see.
I'm kind of at with it. Like, not yet.
I'm still waiting for Ellis Robinson to have his moment. He almost had it last week when he dropped a pick six on a fourth down play after the was it a catch? Or was it not a catch that DJ missed on the throw? But it just. I'm waiting for him to have his moment right now. Yeah, there's guys in the secondary you want to step now. It's going to be tough the first half of this football game in the secondary because KJ Bolden got ejected last week. He got ejected last week. So per all those crazy rules, yeah, he won't play in the first half of the Mississippi State game.
I forgot about that. That's right. That's a great point. All right, we got 2 minutes left. We'll make our official picks for Georgia tomorrow as well as the Falcons. But right now, we got a huge spread on this Thursday night football game. Broncos at home favored by 9.5 against the Raiders, who I think a lot of us thought at the beginning of the season, oh, would be able to throw it around the yard. They've just been bad.
How about this? The lowest, I think, like, or the highest stuff rate by a running back this year is a guy that they projected to have a huge rookie year this season, and that's Ashton Jeanty. They're not getting anything right now from their running game. Nothing at all right now from the running game.
And that's what a bad offensive line will do to you.
Indeed.
And the Raiders have had a bad offensive line for, I think, my entire life, except for the season they went to the Super Bowl.
And that was the year the guy ended up in Mexico, Barrett Robbins. So.
That's right. 9.5 is a lot, but the Broncos are really good. What do they have, a 5-game winning streak going on right now? Something like that. Bo Nix is starting to play well again after a sluggish start. It's a huge number. But, Oren, 9.5, what are you doing here?
I'm going to do something that I don't normally do, and that's take advice from Mark Zeno.
Wow.
Yes.
Risky proposition.
It's a very risky proposition, but it has some warrant to it. They're 2 wins by more than a touchdown this year for the Broncos were against the worst teams in the league. Oakland doesn't fall too far from that. But a 9.5 line, that's a big line. So at this point, I got to find a way to steal a game. And the conventional wisdom says take the Broncos and the points. I'm going to take the Raiders this week.
Ooh, I'm going to Riverside you right quick.
Yeah, do it quick,
right
yes.
quick. I'm taking the Broncos in this one to win big. I'm going to say the Broncos win 27-10, something along those lines. The game's at home. The Raiders stink.
Yeah. Brock Bowers went off last week, so Brock being back might.
Yeah, but it's like Drake London for the Falcons. Great. You have one thing working.